guys, Akil Stokes here, and welcome back to another episode of the Trading Coach Podcast. In today's episode, I want to share with you an interview that I recently did with Sylvia from Sylvia's Trading Lounge. Now, the YouTube version of this is going to be a little bit different than the podcast version, right? So if you go to my YouTube channel, YouTube/Akil Stokes, you're actually going to see that in this interview, there was a section where we talked about the charts as well. So if you want some technical analysis, if you want a little bit more insight into my trading philosophy and how I break down a price chart, make sure you check out the YouTube version of this podcast as well. But of course, the audio version is nice too. All right, let's hop into things, and I hope you guys enjoy.
About your journey into trading, how you started, why you're still at it 13 years later, and why you look forward to the market open every day.
Okay, sure. I started in trading because I was fortunate enough to, my father taught me some pretty good concepts about just financial education and investing and saving from a very young age. So, you know, when I was little, I had a savings account and I had a money market account and certificate of deposit and whatnot. And when I graduated college, I was asking him, well, what's the next step? And he said, well, you should probably have some exposure in the stock market, just get started investing. And I started doing that. And at the same time, I was fortunate enough where my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, her grandfather essentially was this big time investor. I didn't know about it, but I later found out. And he had brought me in just to kind of vet me to make sure I was the right fit to be dating his granddaughter. And when I found out that he was this kind of, not a big shot investor, but he was very experienced, I kind of just shadowed him. I was interested, and I just, like a fly on the wall, I just sat back. I watched all of his conversations, watched all of his meetings, and just started kind of dipping my toe in. And once I get involved, I grew to love it. It was not, obviously you can make money out of it, that was big, but it was kind of the game aspect of it. I'm a former athlete, so I'm always in search of kind of competition. And it was kind of cool to come in each and every day to try to figure out this puzzle. And I had pretty good success at first. And it became something that I really enjoyed. I was passionate about, and I started asking myself, you know, how can I make this a career? At the time, we were in the recession here in the US, so I couldn't get a job to save my life. I was working three odd jobs and taking master's courses at the university. So I just decided to go for it. And I thought, I guess when I first started to go for it, I decided to transition into Forex because a good friend of mine told me kind of what you hear on the internet a lot, you can make a lot of money with a lot less money than in the stock market in a shorter period of time. And one of the things that bothered me about the stock market was, yes, I was making money, but it was more longer term investment. So it took time. It took years to kind of really see profit. And because I didn't really have too much money in the market, the profit wasn't really life changing. So I hopped over to Forex in hopes of getting rich quick, essentially. It's kind of embarrassing to say that because now I promote the exact opposite, but that's what suckered me in, and I failed miserably. And it was really a humbling experience where I had to learn that essentially I didn't know as much as I thought I knew. And I had to take a few steps back, gain some perspective. I found good mentorship, got coached up, still failed miserably for a while, but eventually kind of looked myself in the mirror, started doing the right things, and ended up becoming a consistently profitable trader. Took that skill of trading to start managing money for others. So developed the business out of it to make myself more income. And then eventually got into coaching where I get to work with, you know, thousands of traders on a daily basis. And it's just such a rewarding experience. So I look forward each and every day to the markets, not just because it's intriguing. It's a puzzle that I don't think I'll ever master, but I'm going to try. And because I know I'm working with people and giving them a chance to really change their lives and achieve their dreams as well. So that's big for me. And it makes me feel like I'm providing value to the world.
Right. And actually, most of the traders who we have had in the past have also a similar story to yours of failing and going back at it. So what lessons can you share with those of us who are still at that stage? You know, we're still trying to get, you know, good at the trading. Like, what lessons did you draw from your failures that you can tell us today?
I guess the biggest lesson that stood out is that I was focused on the wrong things. I was so focused, even when I got coached, I was so focused on finding the magic strategy. I wanted to find the easy strategy that wasn't too complicated, the magic strategy that worked. And in search of this magic strategy, I actually never learned how to trade. One of the coolest stories I have, I don't know if it's cool, maybe a little embarrassing, but I was supposed to be a trend continuation trader. So I was trading this trend continuation strategy where I'm supposed to hop on the trend and the trend is your friend until it ends and all that fun stuff. And I was doing it. I had a strategy. I was trading it. And I remember getting a message one day from someone saying, "Hey, Akil, you know, what's the euro dollar doing? Is it bullish or it's bearish?" And I looked at a chart and I couldn't answer it. And I don't know what it was about that moment, but it hit me. It's like, I'm supposed to be a trend trader, but I can't tell if the market's trending or not. And that's when I realized I needed to take a step back and actually learn the skill of technical analysis. If I focused on learning just the basic skills of technical analysis, how to read a price chart, how to make proper predictions, that in the future I can really trade numerous amounts of ways. That's the core, the foundation of everything, is just being able to read price. And I just didn't think about that until that moment.
Right. So like today, as we speak, can you just share with us what your trading plan entails? And if you do agree with the notion that traders shouldn't rely on hope or gut feeling, if they do have a solid trading plan.
Yeah. So I believe in having a solid trading plan. I think everything you do should be rules based. So a successful trader should handle themselves just like a successful business. When you look at any successful business or a franchise, they have a strict protocol on how you should do things. This is how the store should look. This is how the employees should dress. This is how you should, if you're working at like a McDonald's, this is how the burger should be made. It's really systematic and it's consistent, because consistent analysis plus consistent execution equal consistent results. So everything is rules-based in my trading plan. I like to use something called an if-then syntax. So it runs kind of like a computer program where I look at the chart and if I see this, then I look for that. If I see this, then I look for that. And it's basically just working through a checklist of what you need in the market. And if all the boxes are checked, then you take the trade. I think traders that enter on hope or thought, you're doing nothing more than gambling, and not even gambling in a positive way. You're just, you know, we call it being on a drug called the hopium, where you're in a trade, it's going against you, and you're just hoping that it changes. There's nothing actually that's going to tell you it's going to change, but you're just kind of praying and hoping for the best. And there's no long-term consistent success in that. You may get lucky, and that's probably the worst thing that can happen, because then your ego and your confidence gets inflated. But it never works. It never works big picture. So a trade plan has to be systematic. It has to be rules-based. It should be something that is testable, verifiable, and certainly repeatable in the markets.
All right. Does it have to do with a probability? If something happens in the markets, then what's your action step? Like,
you should have an edge. So what you're trading should have an edge, meaning that it works more time than not. And it doesn't necessarily work more times than it doesn't, but it has what's called a positive expectancy. So if you were to take the same action repeatedly, you should be in profit. You know, sometimes a trader can have a low win percentage with a very high risk reward profile, or a trader can have a high win percentage with a very low risk reward profile. It doesn't really matter. But you want to have a positive expectancy. So what you're looking to identify in the market, if you were to execute it that way consistently, it should make profit. And the way you find that out is by what's called backtesting. So you want to go through historical data. You want to look for exactly what the thing is, whatever your strategy is, and you want to test it over thousands and thousands of trades and see what the outcome comes. Believe it or not, a lot of the time what traders are trading is actually random. It's no different than a coin flip. So you want to make sure that what you're looking at actually has an edge in the market and isn't just kind of a random movement, because most of what the market gives you will be random, and our job to kind of figure out, you know, what's not and take advantage of that and stay away from what is.
All right. Your firm has been listed, you know, as from Forbes as one of the leading trading educators. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about the candlesticks that you use. And before you go to the visual explanation of how you do your trading process, maybe you can just tell us which candlesticks do you normally make use of and which ones are really the ones that you really don't need for the beginning trader.
Okay, so I at one point in my career, I was big on all the different candlestick names and whatnot. I even tried to study them for like a spelling test and memorize them. I've kind of backed off of that, and I believe in just being able to read the candlestick, being able to read the story that the candlestick tells you. So we're looking at strength. Do we have a strong bullish candle, a neutral bullish candle, or a bearish or a weak bullish candle? And the same thing for the bear candles as well. And no one candlestick, in my opinion, makes a difference. It's all about the combination of the series. So something I like to look, one of my favorite, I guess, combinations you can say is called a three-bar reversal, where you'll see a high momentum, let's say we're looking for a bullish trade. We'll see a high momentum bearish candle come down. So think a long red candle or a long bearish candle. After that, we'll see what's called an indecision candle or a reversal candle. So a doji, where the body of the candle is in the middle and the wicks are equal on both sides, the top and the bottom. That's kind of like a stalemate in the market, kind of a tie game, I guess you can say, or a pin bar. So a candlestick with a long tail to the downside after that, a high momentum bearish candle, and then a close to the upside. And what that gives me is a sign of potential reversal. Obviously, the market is coming off of a high momentum period, but then there's a little bit of a pause, and what happens next is going to be very important. So if we can get what's called a higher high, higher close after that, so a situation where the next bar closes above that previous bar, that's a very good clue that we may be seeing a reversal. Now, what's important overall is the what is not as important as the where. So you can have all these candlestick patterns, all these candlestick combinations in the world, but they're only as important as to where they happen in the market. If they're not happening at a level in which you are predicting a reversal, then they're just pointless. So you always want to have that main prediction first of, if price gets to this level, then I look for this specific candlestick combination before entry. But that higher high, higher close, that three bar reversal, that's one of my favorites.
All right. And what's your view on the contrarian approach to trading?
So what do you mean by the contrarian approach?
All right. I love this quote by Warren Buffett that says, be greedy when others are fearful.
Okay.
So something to the tune of that. Yeah.
I believe in that 100%. And I think the times that we're dealing with right now is a perfect example. Obviously there's lots of, it's a bad time in the world. And the markets are reflecting that. And it's going to be a time where a lot of, and I guess we're kind of in the middle of that already, where we're seeing a lot of fear in the market. Stock markets are crashing, economies are doing poorly, and a lot of people are scared. This is the time to look for opportunity. If you look at stock markets historically, right, they increase in a very predictable way. And the way I like to look at things right now is, instead of everything crashing and doomsday, is we're getting discounts in the market. We're buying something, especially if you look like the S&P, where it's blue chip companies. We're getting very, very good companies that we would normally buy at a higher price. We're going to have the opportunity to buy them at a lower price. So while others are fearful when they're selling and they're selling and they're selling, we should be looking to establish that position and buy cheaply, because 10 years from now, right, we're going to make a massive amount of profit off of that. You know, this may not be the bottom. Who knows? I'm not in the business of picking tops and bottoms. I just want a discount. It's no different than me going into my favorite store and I see something I like and them telling me, hey, it's 50% off. Oh, I'm going to buy two of them because I planned on buying one anyway. So I do like that approach. I think in general, most people don't know what they're doing in the financial markets. Their decisions are based off of what they hear on TV. and TV typically just tries to scare you. That's all TV tries to do is make you is scare you. And they react off of that. And when you, I guess this is the best way to put it. By the time you hear about it on TV, that move has already been made. So by the time the television channel talks about, hey, you should be scared, or you should be scared of this, you should be scared of that, that's already happened, because all they're doing is reacting to what they're seeing in the market. Smart investors, you know, we're trying to get involved before that, and then use kind of the, sounds bad, but use the general public to our advantage.
All right.
So yes, I agree. A long-winded answer for I agree.
All right. At some point you did manage people's funds. Do you prefer having to trade for other people, or now doing it for yourself and for your fund?
I hated it. I absolutely hated it. One of the reasons I got into trading, because it was fun. It was a game. I was passionate about it. It turned into a business really, really fast when I started managing money. And there was a massive amount of pressure. Trading in a demo account, there's very little pressure. Trading live money, there's a lot more pressure, as many of your traders probably know, going from one to the other. When you're trading someone else's money, it's 100 times worse. Because it's not only your money that you're losing or potentially losing, it's someone else's as well. And there was always this pressure. And I had a very, my main client was a very active client. So he was one that liked to email me and text me every day. Hey, how are we doing? How's this? How's that? I think we should do this. Like he thought he was an investor, but wasn't. So he'd try to give his opinions. And as a younger dude, it was really difficult, because I wanted to stick to my plan. I wanted to do what was proven, what I knew I needed to do. But at the same time, I didn't want to disappoint him. I didn't want to seem like I'm going against him and potentially have him pull his money back. So psychologically, it was very hard for me to deal with that. And just, I was stressed out. It wasn't fun. And just, it sucked all the love out of trading. So I definitely enjoy the coaching side of it better. Again, I feel value in that. I know I'm making a difference. As far as trading money for people that are already very, very wealthy, I didn't really feel like I was doing anything to benefit kind of the bigger picture. And that, along with the pressure and trading just not being fun anymore, it just wasn't an enjoyable experience. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did it.
Bro, I'm just going to go straight ahead and ask a question, which many new traders ask this question. And it's about returns. So someone is new, starting out in trading, and basically in terms of returns, what is the ideal number that they can expect from their trading? And also, to add on to that, are the returns basically linked to skill or effectiveness of a strategy in terms of the win rate, or it has to do a lot with risk management?
So risk management is the number one key overall. Number one rule of trading is don't go broke. If you go broke, you can't play the game. If you can't play the game, you can't make money from it. So you gotta stay in the game. I was actually having this conversation the other day, and it really depends on your personality. Everyone's kind of different as far as what they need, win percentage wise, how much action they need. And that's going to be a personal question that each trader has to ask themselves. There's not as much action in the markets as one would think. So if someone thinks they're going to come in and trade 20 times a day, they're out of their mind, and they may be lucky if they get 20 trades in a month. But at the same time, you may not be able to. So I was having a conversation with a trader the other day who had a trading thing. He was working on a trading plan. He's like, yeah, I get like 5 trades a year. And I'm like, that's a little bit too low for me. So it's balancing frequency to have enough trades to exploit your edge. The win percentage doesn't really matter as much. It only matters in comparison with the risk reward. So, you know, historically I'm about a 55% trader. I range between 45 and on a hot year, 60%. So I win just as much as I lose. The key is I'm very, very good with risk management. So when I win, I win bigger on average than what I lose. I'm very good at protecting kind of my risk profile in the market. So even with the trade I just showed you, I originally had, I think, like a 70 pip stop loss, right? Halfway through that trade, I was able to reduce it to about 20, and then hopefully I'll be able to reduce it to about break even soon. So I think the more you can reduce that risk, manage it, and make sure that, you know, you take small losses, you don't take any devastating losses, you're going to be able to keep more of the profits that you get from your winning trades. So risk management is definitely key. You want to have enough trades to kind of make you feel okay, but you definitely, it's going to be based off your personality more than anything.
Okay, thank you. And to add on to that, guys, Akil, basically, if you visit his YouTube page, there's a video that he put up on risk management specifically. And basically, in that video, Akil discusses, you know, how to create amazing returns responsibly by adding a position sizing strategy. And you can check out that video in his YouTube channel. And on to that question about my position sizing still. And one of the members, in our trading group is basically asking, do you use the ATR to determine your stop losses and when it comes to targeting profit levels, where you basically have your take profit? So this is a very good question, guys, because personally, I knew about ATR, using the ATR as a risk management tool, as a tool for position sizing, I think after 3 years into trading, 4 years, so you can imagine. Yeah, so can you kindly please talk about ATR? And also, guys, to add on to that, you can check out his video on position sizing. Very important.
I appreciate the promo. That's awesome. ATR is big for me. As you saw the chart, I don't really use too many indicators. I use RSI and ATR. There was a moving average on the chart I showed you. That's because I was demonstrating something for someone else. But the ATR is big. The ATR, for you guys that may not be aware, it's the average true range. So it's a tool that measures basically the range of movement, the volatility, if you want to call it, in the market. And I use it to base my stop losses. So whenever I get into a trade, and I combine it with structure as well, but whenever I get into a trade, I'll use some type of multiple of the ATR to base my stop loss. So if I'm involved in a trade, I may say, hey, I'm going to get one ATR below the low, or I'll get 1.5 ATR below the low of this candle. So it's something I use every single day in the market. I don't use it too much for targets. I tend to like to use analysis for targets. But I've had many strategies in the past where I've used an ATR for targets as well, where I'm simply expecting a 2 ATR move and using a 1 ATR stop. And you can easily set yourself up with a really good risk profile by consistently doing that. And I like it because it's dynamic too. The ATR obviously changes as price moves. So ATRs have been inflated the last couple of months in the market because things have been going all wacky and weird. So it gives you kind of a good way to, I guess, base your trades with what's going on in the market as far as volatility. So I love it.
Okay, guys, thank you for that. As you guys have heard, ATR is very important for gauging volatility, so that when you size your position, and most traders, forex traders especially, the new ones, what we mean by sizing a position, we mean the lot sizes that you put, because this is usually very pertinent. Many traders normally ask that question. You traders, what is the proper lot size to use? So guys, try to explore the ATR. It's gonna guide you in doing that. And there is one thing, Akil, also that is usually a very pertinent question. So basically, when you pop up your chart, you open your chart, you look at the market watch or the watch list, there is a bunch of currencies, lots of currencies. So what criteria do you use to choose the currencies that you would want to trade? This is something that usually comes up, and it is usually confusing for very many new traders.
So this all comes down to backtesting. So when you have a system or a strategy that you plan on using, as I mentioned before, you wanna test it. You wanna make sure it works before you ever put any live money at risk. So what we advise that our traders do, and what I advise all traders do, is once you have that plan, that system, that strategy, you want to do historical testing on it. And I would do that on every single market. It's going to take a while. It's going to be a big time investment, but it's going to be work that could sustain you for years to come. And when you do that testing, you'll start to notice what strategies, or what pairs, I should say, your strategy works better on, what it works worst on, because your currency pairs are kind of like employees, right? Every employee is different, right? Some need to be managed differently than others. They all have their own personality, and same thing with the charts. The dollar yen is going to act completely different than the Aussie Canada, right? You may have pairs that are historically more directional, more trendy. You may have pairs that are more consolidative, more choppy. They go sideways. And some of those pairs are going to work really, really well for your strategy. Some aren't. So you want to be able to know with data, right? You want to be able to know which work well and which don't. So after you have all of that data from all of the hours and months probably invested in testing, you'll have the numbers in front of you, and you can literally go through them and say, okay, dollar yen, yep, this one works. Aussie Canada, this one doesn't work. And you just check X out. And then depending on what size of portfolio you want to trade, you can literally just handpick the best performing pairs. So it's just like, you know, any athletic event, just pick the best players and put them on your team. And now you're trading the markets that you know, right, historically have worked the best with your specific trading style.
So Akhil, on back testing, so there are some traders who, most traders, when they start out, as manual traders, basically. And sometimes they wonder, how can I back test my strategy, yet I cannot do it like someone who wants to use an automated system. So what's your advice on doing this, on back testing manually? How will they be able to do it so that they can be confident that when they're conducting the back testing, hindsight bias does not get in the way?
That's tough. First and foremost, I believe in manual back testing. I understand the point of automated back testing, but there's nothing that's going to build confidence like manual back testing. There's nothing like doing the work yourself and going on a losing streak, and you're literally typing in, another loss, right? And then seeing that in the future, you got these wins and it makes up for it. There's nothing that can boost your belief and your confidence like that. You know, automatic backtesting gives you the answer. This one takes you through solving the problem, and that's so much more beneficial. The hindsight bias is hard because it's very easy to want to get the results that you want to see. It's obviously, I don't think any of us back test and want our system to fail. We want it to do well. And it's very hard to avoid saying, I wouldn't have taken that loser because, or, oh yeah, I definitely would have taken that one because it won. You got to be honest with yourself. I always go into back testing. I look for losers. In my back testing, I want to prove that the system doesn't work. Because if I can do everything in my ability to prove that something doesn't work and it still works, I've got a pretty good system to trade. So maybe try the reverse approach. Instead of just looking for winners, try looking for losers. Try your best to look for opportunities that don't work. And if what you're testing still does work after all of your efforts to try and make it fail, you've got something pretty darn good that you could be trading.
Thank you, Akhil. And to add on to that, guys, when it comes to manual backtesting, check out a simulator. You can find it on our website called FX Blue. Okay, it's basically a simulator which you install in your trading platform, then place back the market as if the market is trading live. This can be very, very helpful to you guys whilst you're conducting your backtest. So another thing, Akhil, this lesson, I learned it from you, and it's about flexibility. Mm-hmm. And in one of your lessons, you normally say that you have to be flexible. When the market environment changes, you change also. So can you please be specific to the guys? Are you flexible? Do you have to be flexible in terms of trading style, basically switching from a swing trader to a day trader? Or in terms of strategy, you know, changing a strategy, you are trading trend following strategies, that is trend continuation strategies, then changing strategies, because there is usually a very big problem when someone is starting out trading. You find yourself, you hop into different types of strategies. So what do you mean by that flexibility, being flexible?
You have to be able to make adjustments. You don't necessarily need to go from swing trading to day trading. You don't necessarily need to throw your strategy out the window, but you need to be able to make adjustments. So a good example is this. So I trade something called advanced pattern formations. They're like the Gartley patterns, bats, and whatnot. And typically, traditionally, I take two targets on that. So I take a very conservative target, and I take a more aggressive, bigger target. And we had entered a period of time, this was about 2 years ago, where the volatility in the market had slowed down, and the strategy was struggling. And what I do is, you know, obviously you want to keep track of all your statistics, your data, and I was digging into them, trying to figure out what was going wrong. Was it me? Was it the system? And, you know, digging into the numbers, I discovered that, hey, the opportunities were hitting. It was the secondary targets that just were failing to be hit because there just wasn't enough volatility in the market to hit it. So basically, I was wasting money shooting for a further level that wasn't being hit. And I was able to make the adjustment to say, hey, instead of shooting for those two targets, let's just take everything off at the first target, take a more conservative approach. I call it one in, one out, where it's just your, you know, either your targets are hit or you're stopped out, one or the other. And that saved my trading year. There weren't a lot of big spectacular wins that get you all excited, but it was a bunch of small consistent wins, and it was profitable. So it takes the ability just to know how to read a market and analyze what the market is doing, and being able to dig into your numbers and kind of identify what needs to be worked on, what needs to be kind of switched around a little bit in your trading plan to take advantage of the times that be.
Okay, to follow up on that, I would like you to, you know, dig deeper and basically those, what are the things that you watch for, conditions, in order to make those adjustments, like specifically? For example, in this current market environment where there's a lot of volatility, so volatility might be one of them. Anything else that you consider before you make the adjustments that you have clearly elaborated?
The main thing is just is volatility, but it's also looking for what type of movement is happening in the market. So we are seeing volatility in the market, but we're not seeing a lot of directional movement. We're seeing more kind of choppy movement. And when we're seeing that choppy movement, meaning price isn't really trending that much in the Forex market, we know that it's going to be very, very difficult for trend continuation strategies. It's going to be good for counter trend strategies, structure-based strategies, but trend trading strategies where you're looking to hop on for a bigger move, those are probably going to struggle. So knowing that and being able to read that in the market, we've just been a lot more conservative with our trade. So it's not even, not only have I been conservative with my targets, but my entries. Instead of taking more aggressive entries, I've really dialed back a little bit, and I'm waiting for what I call my best trade. So I'm waiting for basically the market to give me all the signs in the world that I may be right, instead of being maybe more aggressive and taking a shot on things. So in times like this, it's kind of a risk averse approach where you kind of throw to the side your okay trades and you go to what is your go-to strategy, what is your best strategy, and really a more conservative approach in the market.
Okay, thank you, Akil. One more last question from me. There is just so much that I would love to talk to you, that the members of the audience would love to hear from you. So one last question. It has to do with overtrading. This is something which you're quite big on, not to overtrade, even to quote you and feel the need to trade. That can be a bit problematic, to basically paraphrase your quote. So Akil, there is a lot of need to trade, you know, given this COVID-19 issue, given that guys are staying at home. So this need to trade, how can it be bad? So, and in relation to that, how many trades per month, for example, do you normally put on so that you don't find, you don't overtrade? Can you kindly expound more on that concept of overtrading because of that need to trade?
That's tough, and especially for newer traders. I think as a newer trader, the need to trade is even more because it's, you're in it, you're new, you learn something new, you're excited, and you just, when you want to go, it's like a new toy, you want to go out and play with it. And it could be, like you said, it could be devastating over trading. I don't have a quota for how many trades I take. It really depends on if I'm doing more day trading or swing trading. But to give you an example, I'm probably at this point, I'm probably taking maybe 15 trades a month, So it's not all too much. And that's between swing trading and day trading. If it was swing trading only, that number would probably be cut in half, maybe 7. But I think, I think a tip to over trading is, A, you only want to take the trades that you're supposed to take. You only want to be involved in the market when you're supposed to be involved in the market. So if you have a rules-based trading plan that tells you what you're allowed to trade and what you're not allowed to trade, and you eliminate all of those think or hope trades, you're not going to overtrade. If you have a set routine of when you're supposed to be in the market, so my day trading day goes from 7:30 to 10:30. That's when I can actively day trade, right? Outside of those times, I'm not actively looking at the charts at all. I close them down. Unless there's something I'm managing or I'm tracking on a higher time frame, I'm not spending extra time in the market because I'm only going to have that temptation to try and trade stuff. So you can fill that with other things. You can fill it with back testing. You can fill it with reviewing videos if you're learning, or going on YouTube, listening to podcasts. I try to fill it with, obviously I have stuff to do for the business, but with family and kids. But getting away from the market is key. And if you can, again, only take the trades you're supposed to take, you're never going to overtrade. If your trading plan gives you 80 opportunities in the month, you're not overtrading because they're all good trades. They're all trades you were supposed to take. So trade the trades your plan is supposed to take, and don't spend, have a routine for when you're supposed to be in the market, when you're analyzing charts. Stick to that routine. And when it's your time to be away from the markets, get away from the markets, right? Many traders got into trading for time freedom anyway, right? Freedom of time. You're defeating that purpose if you're going to spend, 20 hours looking at a chart. So those are the two tips I would have, I guess.
Okay, Akil. I'm sorry about this, but I cannot let this go. It's also one of the most common things that are new traders normally ask. And it's basically about time frames. And going back to your point, when you're answering the previous question, you have spoken about consistency. And you also normally talk about consistency when it comes to looking at time frames.
Yep.
And guys normally ask, what is the right time frame? How should I look at time frames? It's something that usually requires a lot, as you very well know. So how do you do that? What's the right time frame?
So there is no best time frame. There's only the best time frame for you. I believe in having a multiple time frame approach, either consistently using 2 time frames or 3 time frames. And you want to decide what they are well in advance. So a trader shouldn't be coming into the market looking at different time frames every day. Like I've had traders that are, one day they're looking at the hourly, then it's the 30 minute, then it's the 15, then it's the 4 hour, then it's the 2 hour, because there's no consistency in that, right? And going back to over trading, if you want to trade bad enough, you'll find a way to do it. We all know that. You can go down to some chart and they'll give you some signal and you can take it. But there's no consistency in that. You're not seeing the same thing. So I believe in a 2 time frame approach, right? A higher time frame for that I and P part, identify, predict, to get that kind of bird's eye view. And then a lower time frame to kind of get a micro look at the markets where you can decide how you want to get involved and eventually execute the orders. And those time frames need to be specific. They need to be deliberate. They should be the same exact thing every day. So, for example, I go daily, 4 hour, hourly, right? Those are my time frames. I never go to the 2 hour. I never go to a 30 minute, daily, 4 hour, hourly. And every once in a while, you'll get an opportunity where it's like, man, I bet if I looked at like a 2 hour, this would look a lot cleaner. But it's like, is that in your plan, Akil? No, it's not. So you can't do it. And if you take that consistent approach, again, you increase the likelihood of you seeing the markets the same way each and every time. And if you can be consistent in that analysis, you're much more consistent in the trades that you take. And then again, if you're trading with the edge, the more consistent you are with the trades you take, the more chance you are of being comfortable and stopping those psychological mistakes, but also seeing consistent profitability at the end of the day.
Thank you for that, Akil. As guys, as you've heard, there is really no right time frame where you think that time frame is going to be like your gold mine. Time frame basically depends on you and your approach. Mm-hmm. And as Akil has said, basically you can hear from his presentation is that he uses a multiple time frame approach when it comes to doing his time frame analysis. So Akil, thank you very much. There is just a lot, and I hope you can come in next time and it will be more about looking at charts, looking at those candlesticks, you know, bit delving deep into the technicals of your method. And thank you very much, Akil, for this.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This is great. You guys got so many viewers too. This is awesome. I love it.
Hi, Akil, before we let you go, I can see you have some bookshelf right next to you. So what's your current favorite trading read? And also mention your YouTube channel or any other place guys can go to access your work.
Man, favorite book. You can see there's a lot of them. Not all of them have been read. So a little bit, I've got a little catching up to do. My favorite book, I guess I would say this, three books I always recommend for traders, for newer traders especially, are Market Wizards by Jack Swagger. That's a good book because it's an interview with the best traders of all time. It's what allowed me to see that there is no one secret strategy to trading, and also that all of these greatest traders of all time failed miserably. So at the time I was failing miserably and I was like, yeah, this is awesome. I can still do it. So it gave me confidence. One Good Trade by Mike Bellafiore. Really, really good. He is the founder of S&B Capital, which is a prop firm in the US. Very good book to get a realistic view of what professional traders look like and what professional prop firms look for. And it kind of dispels kind of the myths that many hear on the internet. So very, very good book there. And I would also say Trading in the Zone, Mark Douglas. He does a lot on trading psychology. Excellent book to get the mental side down. Also allowed me to understand why I was afraid of dogs for most of my life. So that was a big plus as well. So those would be three reads. As far as shamelessly promoting myself, youtube.com/Akil Stokes, you can go to. You can go to tier1trading.com. That's my site. I'm not sure when this webinar is going to come out, but when this interview is going to come out, but we just did a free 4-day workshop, like 12 hours of footage. The recording is still online. So if you go to tier1trading.com, click the little thing that says Ascension Workshop, you should be able to watch all 4 days of that workshop. That's going to go away on the 17th. I'm going to talk to my partners, see if we can expand that a little bit, because I don't know when this is coming out. But I would highly recommend that. It's free content, talking trading from a technical perspective from the beginning up, also talking about the business side of trading as well, and even teaching a strategy that you can use on the daily charts, or something you can literally come in and check once a day. So very powerful session. It's free. Take advantage of it.
All right, we'll give reference to that when we're releasing the interview. And just to say, final words to the audience. There's a new announcement from Scope Markets. They did introduce a Kenya shilling, KES, in their list of asset instruments paired against another currency. So that's one thing to look out for, as well as, you know, the obvious regulation with CMA, local regulation, in addition to the international regulation. And yeah, much gratitude to you, Akil, for coming on, and to Scope Markets for sponsoring this webinar. And my final words from my co-hosts.
Thank you, Akil. Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope we have a chance to engage again. And I'm really glad that your best book when it comes to trading is by Bellafiore's book. I remember reading that book, One More Trade. Guys, you really have to check that out. And then we also had a conversation with Brett Steinberger. Awesome, you know, awesome trading psychologist. Yes. There's also that podcast up there. I've also seen you in some of your photos. You hang out with some of those guys from that prop firm in New York. And fantastic. Thank you very much, Akil.